Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy 4th. As the gentleman said, Dr. Medici's working towards his PhD. Yes, he is. Slowly, though. Why? I'm buried in work, and that work is composed of you. And you, well, you're doing well, but we need to do better. Chronic disease, chronic health issues today are more rampant than they were 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. You're not reading about this because it's, you know, we want the hype, the modern miracles, and we're making the world better in many ways, but on the overall, it's still pretty bad out there. Thus, shows like this, an increasing audience devoted to health healing shows, radio talk shows. What makes this show different? Well, I try to separate fact from fantasy. This isn't about alternative medicine versus MD hospital medicine. This is about what in alternative medicine really makes sense and what's the schlock. And there's lots of schlock in alternative medicine, but we're not going to focus on that. What we're going to do is we're going to take a concept today, pH, acid alkaline. And we're going to try to separate the truth from the hype. And that's the thing. We've got a lot of these subjects in alternative medicine that have a lot of truth in them and that should be understood by people. At the same time, they're filled with a ton of hype. And this is where the marketing campaigns extrapolate out of the science. And before you know it, we have a stinking lie. This thing with pH is in part one of these lies. Now, where did it start? It always starts with good, hard scientists. Let's go. That's right. You may not be on the website. If you're on the website, go to picture number 7. That's straighttalk.cc. Not .com. Straighttalk.cc. If you're driving, if you can't, then when you get home, get to the website. I put pictures on the shows because, well, you see why. Go to picture number 6. Let's talk and start with Dr. Otto Warburg, 1931 Nobel Prize winner for cancer discovery. That's a bit of a, he didn't discover cancer, and this is what happens when you pull things from online. Lots of people slant everything. But what he did say is that no disease, including cancer, can exist in an alkaline environment. And I didn't hear him say that. I wasn't there at the time, but this is so commonly quoted, you got to give it the benefit of the doubt. It is most likely an authentic statement. Out of that came acid alkaline balance, the pH miracle, and all these different books attesting to pH and how you take your pH and acid alkaline strips and the rest of it. And this is where it starts to go south, and I'm going to start to explain why. But let's start with the hard science. I like to do that. So do you. That's why hopefully you enjoy the show. It starts to the hard stuff, gets into the semi-hard stuff, and then hopefully illuminates the soft stuff so you don't spend and waste your dollars on it. Otto Warburg, 1931. Look at the next thing. Go to picture number 7. If you're driving, I'll read it to you. Dr. Otto Heinrich Warburg. 1931 Nobel, the root cause of cancer. Warburg discovered the root cause of cancer in 23. Of course, how can anyone say that? So that statement's absurd. And he received the Nobel Prize. Well, he did, and that means something. Warburg was director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, now the Max Planck Institute. This is as good as it gets, guys. Say what you want. Otto was one of the world's most prominent scientists, and Germany did incredible science in those decades. Investigated the metabolism of tumors and respiration of cells, particularly cancer cells. This is when we barely understood the Krebs cycle, glycolysis, oxidative phosphorylation. This is when the best work is always done. Honestly, it's in the exploratory phases of normal physiology. And I hope some of you can understand this, or most of you. The best science you get is when great minds study normal physiology yet undiscovered. Back then, we didn't really understand glycolysis, the Krebs cycle, oxidative phosphorylation, not with any great sophistication. So we bring the best minds in science to it, and invariably, they always study what happens in deviation of it. In deviation of it, this is important, so let's repeat it. The best minds in science are always brought to the frontier of understanding normal physiology for that decade or two. And they also study aberrant normal physiology, meaning what happens when cell respiration goes south. And that's where you get some of your best work. This was done with precipitation and disease, a show I did a while back, a couple of years ago, precipitation and disease. Doctors were trying to figure out in the normal realm of physiology why you started precipitating calcium oxalate, calcium urate crystals, calcium hydroxyapatite, and great work was done then, and then it all gets shoved to the side. Well, this decade, they were really studying cell respiration, which we're going to define for you in a moment. And Warburg is saying that when respiration, that is the Krebs cycle, that is oxidative phosphorylation, goes south, you promote disease. And so he does say cancerous tissues are acidic, whereas healthy tissues are alkaline. What does that mean? In between the cells. If you're in there with your pH paper down shrunk to half an angstrom unit, and you're hanging out there with your pH paper in the water between the cells, and you're taking pH, it's got to be in that green side. Water splits into hydrogen and hydroxy ions. If there's an excess of hydrogen, it's acidic, blah, blah, OH, it's alkaline. I wonder if he actually said that. I'm even suspicious of this line. Why would he define that? In his work, The Metabolism of Tumors, he demonstrated that all forms of cancer are characterized by two basic conditions, acidosis and hypoxia. Well, one means the other. Low calcium, low pH, low oxygen, acidosis. We're going to explain that, pointing out that lack of oxygen and the subsequent acidosis are two sides of the same coin. Thank you. Where you have one, you have the other. Okay. He's not just talking about cancer. He's talking about disease. He's talking about pH. And we're talking about the beginning of what ends up being the pH miracle and these books on how you got to make sure your pH is alkaline and how you have to eat to make sure your pH is alkaline and how meat is bad because if you eat meat, it's got too much phosphorus in it and that deprives you of your calcium and your calcium controls your pH and all these different things. Before we jump to that erroneously, let's go back. So picture number 8. Warburg theory of cancer. How about the Warburg theory of disease? How about we say that? And this was in Science Magazine, 1956. So this is 60 years ago. Cancer arises from damage to cellular respiration. For those of you new to the show, and for some of you who have heard it not enough times, we're going to get into what we mean by cellular respiration briefly. Then we're going to talk about how if cellular respiration breaks down, we have fermentation. And all this is about this pH stuff. So as always, if you just caught up in the wave or the trend of, oh, I've got to get my pH balanced and I've got to get it alkaline, and this is all an important thing to do, I want you to understand it more fundamentally so you can see where all that pH stuff is really true and it works and it's important, and yet aspects of it are a lot of hype. And that's what good investigative reporting does. It gives you both sides and tries to separate fact from fantasy. So we'll get into cellular respiration, but when it breaks down, you get sick. And then what you do is you start to ferment. And then cancer cells continue to ferment in the presence of oxygen. This is what Warburg is calling the Warburg effect. Enhanced fermentation. So the speed up or the acceleration, so massive global fermentation, is the signature. It's the signing. It's the icon of all cancer. So you got a lot of juice in these statements here. Health is efficient respiration. Lack of that efficiency creates fermentation, the production of lactic acid, lactate. And cancer cells grow in an environment in response to advanced fermentation, to the point where this enhanced fermentation really defines it. All right, good. Just hold on to that. Hold on to that. All right, now, let's go into fermentation. Let's go into what we mean by respiration. Respiration is a big word. I can sum it up in about 3 minutes. Go to picture 14. Respiration is where the cell takes sugar, glucose, and through a series of, 8, 9, 10 steps, it changes the glucose to pyruvate. Glucose gets broken down to pyruvate. Certain amount of energy is required. Certain amount is given off. At the end, you have something named pyruvate. This occurs in the cytoplasm of the cell. That molecule, pyruvate, can do a couple of things. But in the normal sense, pyruvate's going to go into the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. Now, out of that Krebs cycle, citric acid cycle, pyruvate, all right, breaks down, and as it breaks down and goes around in a cycle, it's broken down and recycled to acetyl-CoA, but as it breaks down, it gives off very important couple of molecules, NADH and FADH, and both of those are going to be utilized. So the product of glycolysis is pyruvate. The product of the Krebs cycle are these energy-rich compounds, NADH and FADH2. All right? And you're going to take that NADH and FADH, and you're going to throw that then into a third cycle, and that's picture 13 there. And this is called oxidative phosphorylation, where you're taking your NADH and your FADH2, you're throwing it into a series of chain reactions, and out pops on the other end ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the currency of the cell. What the cell uses is dollars. What the cell uses is honeybees, $100 bills, and your cell can use this adenosine triphosphate to repair itself, which it must do, or to do the job it's supposed to do. So for a heart cell to do what a heart cell does, a brain cell, a pancreatic cell, a kidney, a liver cell, a bone cell, a muscular cell, these cells do their job in the process through which glucose feeds into the cell and through these chain reactions I just described called respiration, it pops out ATP, and that ATP is used so the cell can do, and thus the organ can do, what the cell and the organ correspondingly is supposed to do. Or we take that ATP and we give the cell, the organ, a chance to rest. And then we use the ATP to do what? To create repair in the body. If you can get this, you're getting a lot. If you're new to the show and you already have a headache, hang in there. You can get to straighttalk.cc. That's two T's. .cc. And you can review the show. All these shows are archived on all my radio stations. They're all archived. And study them. Because a little study, one show where you learn something is worth 50 shows where you just accumulate data that doesn't do you any good because you don't know what to do with it. Get the concepts. I'm always harping on concepts. Why? Well, in my own 24-year history in this holistic game here, What did it come down to for me? It came down to concepts that you pull and start to respect after tons of trial and error and as you accumulate lots of data. When you reduce concepts to merely data accumulation, well, meet YouTube and meet most of what's on the air. It's just data. It's just data and testimony and sales and the rest of it. And it has its place, but the point is it doesn't exceed the importance of concept. I'm going to harp on this forever and ever and ever. You can't learn enough about the mechanisms of health in the body, and then all the different datas out there start to pay off. You got to learn to navigate your way conceptually. So, a nutshell, glucose comes in, it goes through glycolysis, Krebs cycle, phosphorylation, produces ATP. The ATP is used to do the job of the cell or the organ or to repair. Done. Now, the key point. What happens when there's some breakdown in these processes? Well, we're not going to get into that. Heavy metals will break this process down. Lack of oxygen will break this process down. Lack of minerals will break this process down. These processes, through you pop glucose in and you get out ATP, have efficiencies. They have levels of efficiency. So it's not like, does this work or it doesn't work? See, this is what you got to get. Here's another fine point. Here's what you can't get on YouTube. Variability in the efficiency of this process. Oh, yeah, went to the doctor. My respiration is good. Cellular respiration done good, or cellular respiration done bad. It does not work this way. The reality is this is done in terms of efficiency across a scale. Rest assured, the efficiency you brought to it at 10 years old has been relatively destroyed by the time you're 50. And your efficiency at 50 is way better than your efficiency at 70. And your efficiency at 70 is way better than your efficiency at 90. So let's just say, what was it if I could remember? At a one molecule of glucose, we get 34 ATP. Was that it? I can't, that could be wrong, but somewhere in that 1 to 30 range. One molecule of glucose, we get 34 molecules of ATP. Maybe by the time you're 60, you're only getting 15. And this is what we mean by the sliding scale of efficiency. All the body's systems, you can name any system, are subject to this scale of efficiency or inefficiency. And that's the difference between you feel good and you feel bad. Now, what Warburg is saying, at some point, when the efficiency of this breaks down, it'll cross a threshold. And when the efficiency breaks down beyond a certain threshold, it gets lower or higher, however you view it, in terms of critical mass, you're going to create a problem. That problem is called fermentation. So let's get into fermentation for a moment, which occurs when cell respiration becomes very inefficient. Now, all this is going to pH. We've got a punchline here. And the punchline is, this is all relatively measured in terms of pH. When that pH between the cells, not in the cell, all this that I'm describing is in the cell. But we're saying, Warburg is saying, when the pH in between cells is in that alkaline 6.4, 6.6, 6.8, 7.0 range, everything's going to go kosher. Everything's going to go smooth. And he's saying, when you go in there with your little litmus paper shrunk down to the size of the mini midget, and you're measuring the pH in the intercellular space, and it's 5, 5.2, 5.4, 5.8, then chances are the respiration of the cells in the area is very, very poor. Now, that you can bank on. That's an important thing to bank on. But I'm going to challenge the extrapolation out of which this comes. Okay? So hang on to your seats. Let's discuss fermentation. Go to picture 17. Lactic acid fermentation. You see that picture there, 17? If you're driving, you can't see the picture. It's a picture that just says there's pyruvate on the right side that becomes lactate. And that pyruvate to lactate is what we call anaerobic, without oxygen respiration. It's saying that when that cell can't get enough oxygen inside itself, because calcium is too low, which tends to control the uptake of oxygen. So you got to catch all that now. So let's repeat it. I hear you groaning. Don't groan. Dig in. When pyruvate, being born out of glycolysis, is converted to lactate, this is going to occur, unfortunately, when oxygen contents are low, which reflects low calcium levels. That's all this about. Get the calcium in there, because then you get the oxygen in the cell, because then you promote proper cell respiration. The lack of calcium resulting in the lack of oxygen, but a lot of things can cause lack of oxygen. You could have a lot of calcium, and because you're anemic, no oxygen. You could have lots of calcium, lots of iron, lots of red blood cells, and because you're sucking in carbon monoxide, you have no oxygen. You got to get in there and analyze what hypoxia or low oxygen means. Now, my regular audience appreciate this. This is the stuff. If you can get this stuff, you can understand the nonsense behind the hype. That you're swallowing a lot of calcium in whatever form you're doing is good. So it's good. But that you don't see your intercellular pH move, if you could even measure it, which is very debatable, is bound to all sorts of considerations like this. So the hard science is, Otto Warburg, yes, you want to get a lot of calcium in that intercellular space, because that allows the uptake of oxygen, assuming oxygen's there. If oxygen gets in to the cell, it's going to be utilized, and it's going to drive the proper respiration of the cell, so you're very efficient moving from glucose into 34, 32 molecules of ATP. Done. That's health. No arguments. No argument against the absence of this finally creating an environment where the cell is going to shunt to a lactic acid fermentation, meaning that glucose is going to produce lactate. Bad. Very inefficient production. One molecule of glucose, look at that, you're getting two molecules of ATP. You're talking about one glucose to 32, 34 molecules of ATP against one molecule of glucose and two molecules of ATP. That is a garbage production. You've got the worst factory in the world now. And lots of people live this way. Lots. Diabetics, are you kidding me? People with blood sugar intolerances? I mean, you know, when you consider how many people are in some sort of fermented state growing lots of fungus. There's another myth. My fungus. Where's my fungus coming from? I can't stand it. You tell somebody they have fungus, they flip out. Tell a young woman looking for her husband that she's filled with fungus. Boy, duck. All the fungal infections are off a respiratory cycle that's shunted way more on the side of fermentation. Because if you're fermenting, meaning you have inefficient cell respiration, you're decaying. If you're decaying, you're going to grow fungus to eat the cells that would otherwise live but die. So what herb do you take for your fungal infections? You know, the grapeseed oil and the olive leaf and the this and the that. Great stuff. But you got to get the concepts behind the production of fungus off poor cell respiration. But that's one level of it. Poor cellular respiration, creating a fermented cell cycle, is going to set you up so that whatever you're coded for genetically, whatever genes are hanging out, ready to just get flipped on to your detriment, well, that's the terrain in which you'll begin to see your specific disease. Now, catch this. Isn't this fascinating? Doctor, doctor, I have breast cancer. Doctor, doctor, I have Alzheimer's. Doctor, doctor, I have Parkinson's. Doctor, doctor, I have autoimmune disease. Doctor, doctor, what can I do? Well, miss, to tell you the truth, not a lot. You see, this is genetic, and we've tested you. And in this great age of genetic engineering, and maybe someday in the next 50 to 100 to 200 years, we'll have solutions, just like the great solutions we've spun for cancer over the last 50 years, telling you what you can do for your genetic predisposition towards the lupus or breast cancer or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's that you now have. Do you get what a crock that is? Do you get what idiocy that is? What they ought to be saying, starting with Warburg, is for a series of reasons that we know have nothing to do with your genetics. If the environment in which the cell respirates, a word I can use now, right? Where the cell respirates, begins to corrode the environment, it will start to flip the switch on the epigenetic factors that determine whether or not your mother gene is going to express your disease. And you can control that terrain by not destroying your respiratory cycle. Now that is gold. Take that, put that into your head, and never forget what I just told you. And get on the archives at straighttalk.cc and listen again and again and again until you digest this and can use it functionally. If you're symptomatic, if you have health concerns, if you have a disease, you know what you're supposed to do with this? You're supposed to get yourself out of anaerobic glycolysis, meaning you're supposed to produce your ATP with high efficient respiration. And you're supposed to get yourself out of an anaerobic fermentation. Now, if you understand that, fantastic. Now we can get to understanding this thing about pH. So let's take a look at this thing about pH. If this, like Warburg is saying, is all occurring in an alkaline intercellular space, then what you're assured, if the pH of your intercellular space is, say, 6.8 or 7.0, what you're assured is that this one molecule of glucose is pumping out 32, 34 molecules of ATP, and you have a relatively high efficiency, and that you're not producing too much lactic acid, not growing too much fungus as a result of it, so on and so forth. So if we could measure the pH of the body, we could be reasonably assured then that you're going to be pretty healthy. So doesn't it make sense then to do the pH miracle or to read that acid or alkaline book or to go into macrobiotics, which is very much around that pH concept? Or to take down a lot of coral calcium to measure your pH in the morning. Yes and no. Yes and no. The extrapolation, you got to get this. And if anybody wants to throw hard science at this, bring it on. Because I'm looking for it. I want to believe it. But the notion then that you're going to take a urine strip and measure your midstream morning pH, that you're going to do that, well, that may or may not give you trustworthy results. So I'm going to qualify that statement. Furthermore, to determine your intercellular pH by measuring through the urine dipstick test, that means you take the pH paper and midstream first morning urine, halfway through it, right? You stick it in there and you look at the color and you hope that the color is greenish. Number one, we have so much dispute about whether we should do that way or test the salivary pH. the salivary pH, to put the pH paper, which is the means through which you're supposed to be measuring this intercellular pH. I'm saying this is an extrapolation. I'm saying there may not be so much hard science behind measuring this. There's an enormous amount of science on Warburg's back, and what Warburg is saying is the reality of that space inside the cell. What I'm saying, where we start to get weaker now, and this isn't out of bad intention, so don't get me wrong. When I say that we might have some poor science here, when I say that we're on softer ground, this is not poorly intentioned necessarily, but there may not be such hard science on this. And what's really stands out in the controversy of this is why so many people are talking about midstream morning urine pH versus the saliva. Someone should come forth and really discuss why you've got a whole faction of people who are going to go after the saliva and a faction of people who are going to measure the urine. Personally, through trial and error, I'm a urine guy. And I do this stuff and I support it. But in my experience, you're not on hard rock here. You're not on hard rock, and I'll get into some of the reasons why. Because they're fascinating, and they further and deepen your understanding. So what's the hard rock of all this intercellular pH stuff? All the stuff I said up to how you measure it. The dispute is, do we have a trustworthy way to measure the pH in between the cells? Is taking pH paper, dipping it in to the first morning midstream urine or the saliva, can we stand on that? And I'm saying that's where we're getting a little shaky, and I'll support that claim in a moment. First point being, why in the lineage of people who are really behind this stuff do we have dispute? It's literally dispute here about whether you do it with the saliva or whether you do it with the urine. Right there, that's problematic. And you will notice if you do it in the saliva and you do it in the urine, you're going to get very ambiguous results. So right there, we have an issue. And again, I want to emphasize, it's not to say that people that are into this stuff, me being one of them, are poorly intentioned. It's just that if you really work with it clinically, you really have to question. Question what? Whether we have the tools to measure it. What do you not question? You don't question the basic hardcore science behind it, and I want you to get that distinction. So what are we up to? We're up to the measurement process. And we're saying that maybe to measure efficient cell respiration as a function of urine pH or saliva pH brings us to a shakier place. Okay. That being said, let me complicate matters further. Look at the work of Paul Ek, E-C-K. I didn't put him on the site today, but I've done shows in the past on fast oxidizers and slow oxidizers. One thing that bears itself out clinically. So clinically, I really want to talk clinically, meaning through experience, through empiricism. And I want to make this distinction between when we're talking Otto Warburg, we're talking hard science. When we're talking, well, I did it, and I look at the results, and the results seem to work, or they don't work, or I have an argument against it through my experience, or don't through my experience. And you get this large body of opinion, large consensus saying, look, I did this and that happens, or I did this and this doesn't happen. And I'll stand by that because that's my experience. This is what you're calling empiricism. Empiricism over a period of months, years, decades becomes empirical science. Pulse and tongue diagnosis. Go ahead. Prove why when you have red spots on your tongue, you have toxic heat most likely in the liver. Prove why when your tongue on the tip of it is fiery red. It means you have heart heat or heart fire. No doubt you're not sleeping. No doubt you've been grieving long term. Prove why when the tongue gets square, you've had long-standing emotional problems. Go ahead, prove that scientifically. You can't prove that there's God. We Christians, somebody provide a proof to the double-blind placebo study that there's a God. Well, you can't do that. And you're not even allowed to do it, right? God has no place in science, and science has no place in God. And if you believe that one, I have a bridge to sell you. But nonetheless, this is the way the world works. So why do you believe in God? Empiricism. Your experience of the world tells you deep in the marrow of your bone that there is a God. And you can apply this to all sorts of claims. So we use empiricism. We use it. So empirically speaking, when you see people with litmus paper start to more often push their pH, the pH paper, first morning midstream urine, more often than not, it will correlate with people saying, I feel better. Correlate. That doesn't mean one means the other. I said correlate. There's a proportional increase in satisfaction, health satisfaction, as the morning midstream pH starts to get into the 6.2, 6.4, 6.6 range. But if you extrapolate out of this baloney, the cancer cannot live in an alkaline environment, and you decide, well, my pH is 6.6 every morning, and you think that's going to protect you from cancer, I have a bridge to sell you. If you think your disease is going to go away because you got your pH in the green, forget it. And this is where you got to be careful. You got to not overestimate the meaning of that. And there's lots of reasons for that. I'm going to get to one reason right now. So what are we saying? We're saying there's hard science behind the fact that the pH in the intercellular space has to be alkaline. Hard science. We're saying that, loosely speaking, you can correlate improvement in health to say the first morning midstream urine pH approaching the green. But if you take that further and you start to use it as a dome of protection against illness, be careful with that. And if you start regulating pH and believe then that you're protecting yourself from things like cancer and other forms of disease, really. Why do I say this? Do you know how many people I've met with diseases, cancers included, that sit there in tears and going, but my pH was alkaline. Do you know how many people? I should have a dollar for every person I've met that's been shocked with consistent alkaline pHs to find out that it didn't protect them from anything, or at least it didn't protect them from the disease they were getting or got. And that's not to say, I'm going to repeat it again. It's not to say that they didn't do good. It's just to say that you can't overestimate its meaning. Why? Here's one reason. Paul Ek, famous biochemist, very smart man. Go to picture 29. He pointed out something, that some people are fast oxidizers and some people are slow oxidizers. Now look at that graph there. Generally, the Vata, the Pitta, will be the fast oxidizer. Generally, the guy that gains weight more easily is the slower oxidizer. The guy that, no matter what he eats, doesn't gain weight, that can go on a diet if he wants and lose it so fast, that guy that just drops weight easily, that doesn't even gain it, that's the fast oxidizer, loosely speaking. Look at the graph there, and if you're driving, what this graph is saying is that your Vata, your slender person, the person that just metabolizes foods quickly, always needs calcium and magnesium, and always has an abundance of sodium and potassium. They utilize their sodium and potassium slowly, and they use their calcium and magnesium rapidly. Now, that's a fast oxidizer. A slow oxidizer is going to do the opposite. They're going to use the sodium and potassium quickly, but they're going to utilize the calcium and magnesium slowly. Now, what does this mean? It means for the fast oxidizer, yes, your pH is going to be largely influenced by your ionized calcium. But for your slow oxidizer, that calcium is going to destroy you. For that slow oxidizer, too much calcium. You got to be careful there because you're going to utilize it slowly. More than that, for the slow oxidizer, if they don't get copious amounts of potassium, they're going to screw up their respiratory cycle. They're not going to get their pH. pH is driven for the slow oxidizer by potassium. pH is driven for the fast oxidizer by calcium. Those are the opposite of each other. And the truth of the matter is, there are mixed oxidizers. And the truth of the matter is, depending on your age, your rank, your serial number, your driver's license, your social security, and the color of your eyes, you're going to have different levels of balance in your body, mineral-wise, and with many other variables to determine what that intercellular pH is doing every single day. So why do we pin it on the back of calcium? Why did Carl Reich, let's go up now, let's go up to page number 21, picture number 21, the calcium factor. The Scientific Secret of Health and Youth. Robert Barefoot and Carl J. Reich, MD, out of Canada, Dr. Reich. What was the big thing about the calcium? The big thing about the calcium was if you didn't have enough ionized calcium available in the intercellular space, you weren't going to get oxygen into the cell. Hard science. The extrapolation that if you start shoving down pounds of calcium into your body, that you were going then to get more oxygen into the cell. I want you to catch this. If you got to put on your thinking cap, put on a thinking cap. Get to the show, straighttalk.cc. Get to the website later on. If you're lost in the labyrinth of help, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. If you're lost and you can't figure this out, get help. Not just my help, get somebody's help. But think, question, use empiricism, listen to your body. You know what empiricism is driven out of? Listening to your body. If you're shoving down a lot of calcium, it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Question, because the answers will teach you so much about you. One size does not fit all. There is nothing we're screaming out there. From eat meat, to be vegetarian, to take calcium, to don't take calcium, that doesn't apply differently to different people or to you at different phases in your life, under different conditions, under different seasons. And that's the joy of it. We're like the sky. Every second it's different. And so are you. And you got to get that. You're in dynamic flux. No. I read this book. I swear by it. I do what it says. And I don't care. I had a guy years ago that came in with his wife. Hilarious. This poor guy, nice guy. He was raw. I mean, this guy was raw. And he was a raw vegan. He was skin and bones. He had sores on his legs. He had everything raw. He ate raw mushrooms. He ate raw broccoli. He ate raw cabbage. His wife wanted to shoot him. They almost had a fist fight in my office as he's expounding theoretically on all the benefits of raw, and I'm raw this, and he's proud of it. Raw nuts, raw business, everything's raw. This guy had a week to live. Sores on his legs. He wasn't digesting any of this raw food. And yet, any overweight ex-football player can trot on down to the Optimal Health Institute, or better yet, go out and see Brian Clement out there in Florida at the Hippocrates Institute. Take 1 or 2 months of that, and you're going to come back a king. And we're not going to get into the differences, but this is the point. And so you have to evolve an objective insight into how to navigate. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. That's what I do well. Help you figure out you. And that's the art form. And that's one of the reasons I do this show, to point out the difference. So Barefoot's talking about calcium, and Paul Eck down on the bottom there is talking about calcium too. But good luck, Mr. Barefoot, and good luck, Carl Reich, if you're talking about a slow oxidizer. And what we have to do that we don't do is go back to Warburg, which says what is really reality is that space between the cells has to be alkaline. That we're getting it by giving you calcium is another question. That we're getting it by giving you potassium is another question. That we're getting it by giving you veganism or the paleo is another question. I mean, what's the guy, what the big parade about paleo now, right? Everything's paleo. Against that, meat creates an acidic pH. Animal protein creates an acidic pH. What are we doing then? So we got to get conceptual. I think the American public, I think you listen to this show. I think one of the reasons you love the show is because it's really pointing out the glue between all these very, very diverse opinions. I mean, just look at that. Just listen to this about the danger of an acidic intracellular pH, its relationship that most people buy that meat will create it. For instance, go up to picture one. Go up to picture four. Picture four. For those of you on the road, we're looking at a table of foods that create lots of acid. Acid, bad. Acid, low intercellular pH. This is what you're being told all the time. So what's paleo talking about? So what's primal diet talking about? So what are the meat eaters talking about? The China syndrome, the China study. Well, now that's a study because it said don't eat meat and you'll live longer because studies show red meat causes cancer and red meat makes you acidic. And Michio Kushi agrees to a certain point. And anybody that studies pH knows that meat is highly acidifying. So what's paleo about? You know what? Paleo is right when it's right. Cushy's right when he's right. Veganism is right when it's right. Everybody's right and everybody's wrong. And you will not understand the difference unless you understand the concepts. So we got to move health to the A-list, meaning understanding health needs to go to the A-list. It's already on I'll spend money on it list. But it's not on, I'll spend some IQ points learning to understand. So here, highly acidic is beef. Highly acidic is chicken. Highly acidic is fish. All the things you build muscle on that you get strong on are acidic. So why do it? Well, and that's my point. Everybody's different. So let's go down here to this issue of sodium and potassium versus calcium and magnesium. Some people are going to drive the pH with calcium. Some are going to drive it with potassium. Some are going to drive an alkaline pH with meat. That's right. Some of them are going to drive an alkaline pH with meat. You know why? If you need meat because you're highly metabolic and you need enough amino acid at that level to repair cells because your metabolism is fast and you don't eat the meat, the cells die too fast. When the cells die too fast, the fungus grows. Candida. Candida produces acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde is an acid. And it'll crash your pH because you're growing candida because you're pushing towards cachexia because you're a vegan. Now there. Who's going to do that? O-bloods if they go vegan. Not A-bloods, O-bloods. If they go vegan, what are A-bloods going to do? A-bloods tend to internalize. Are you an A-blood? I'll guarantee you if you're an A-blood, you're a diplomat. You keep your emotions to yourself. You're always trying to be the glue that holds everybody in the room, the family together so that everyone doesn't fight. Unlike the O-bloods. That's right. I see you now. You're nodding your head and going, how did he know that? Just read D'Adamo's work on A-bloods. A-bloods are the diplomats. They are the internalizers. A Bloods go sympathetic dominant like nobody else. A Bloods go sympathetic dominant, another concept. Oh, you don't think sympathetic dominance and intercellular pH have a lot to do with each other? Oh, you think it's about you took your calcium this morning and you're fine? Yeah, you see, this is why we do the show. A Bloods tend to internalize, so everybody else stays happy, and then they gnaw internally all night. And that sympathetic dominant state shuts down their HCL production. Do you know the single most important gastric fluid to control pH between your cells is the hydrochloric acid you produce? Because the hydrochloric acid you produce controls the pH of the whole GI tract. And that pH has massive influence on the pH of your entire body. So there's another connection. Fascinating, isn't it? Yes, Otto Warburg, pH is critical. No, it's not controlled by choral calcium. It is influenced when it's influenced. And when it's not influenced, you have to keep pecking away at it. I didn't get to the punchline yet. It's not late enough to get to the punchline. I'm going to start the punchline in a minute and a half. I'm going to give you the single biggest reason that you got to be really careful extrapolating out of this pH stuff, lest you get yourself into a very, very false sense of security. So, but I'm not there yet. I'm making you wait. Now, let's review. Glucose ATP, 1 to 34 ratio. If it goes south, glycolysis, Krebs, oxidative phosphorylation, you go into fermentation. Fermentation is pyruvate to lactic acid. Lactic acid, bad. Lactic acid, very bad. Drops the intercellular pH. If the pH lowers in the absence of calcium, not countered by calcium, thus the real importance of calcium, then your pH goes up into the alkaline level, doesn't go into the alkaline levels. You can't get oxygen if it's even present, meaning iron, hemoglobin, proper numbers of RBCs, no infections, eating all your iron, all sorts of things like this. If that's not there, you don't get the oxygen anyway because it's not there to get in. But if it is, then great. Then you can have a normal cell respiratory cycle. And Warburg says you're going to stay healthy. Now, if it goes south, for all those reasons, you're going to start to produce an anaerobic state. And you'll grow fungus on the backside of that. That fungus will have its own disease-producing consequences, one of which in the case of Candida, which is your first opportunistic fungus. Candida is your smart, dumb fungus. Smart because it's the first one to capitalize. Dumb because there are uglier funguses in there, man. And if you get them, you're cooked. But that alkaline, that Candida albicans produces acetaldehyde, another grossly acidifying variable. So if you go towards fermentation, you're stuck. So then we get to acid alkaline. How do you measure acid alkaline? Well, you can do it with the urine. That's what I would do if I were you. The saliva thing, I don't know, something got lost in translation on that. But I'd use the urine thing, and there's a loose correlation. But as far as calcium to drive it, the Carl legend, so on, so important if empirically you can see it move your pH. If you don't, you have to understand it's controlled by lots of other things. Paul Eck was pointing out you may be potassium driven right there. You just blew the lid off the calcium factor. You just contradicted it. And so on and so forth. The punchline. Go to picture 25. Fibrin. Picture 25, fibrin, where you have an inflammatory process in some isolated part of your body, the head from head trauma, the foot from foot trauma, the liver from liver trauma, the spleen from spleen trauma, the heart from heart, where you have organs, unlike the rest of your body, decaying for whatever reason. Let's not get into the reasons. Those organs can isolate from the rest of the body and become their own interference field in which they are baking in acidity, although the total acid alkaline balances alkaline, that specific area of your body, traumatically, emotionally induced, can be baking in acidity. Do you get that? Your midstream urine pH could be 6-8, but your brain could be rotting in decay. Your morning pH could be perfectly normal, but your left testicle could be dying in acidification, or your ovary. You see how it works? You have to consider isolated body parts that are not reflected in the overall pH finding, which means your pH can be normal, and yet you've got an isolated body part that's about to go cancerous, or your pH could be acidic, and yet on the overall, most of your body parts are getting as much as they need. And even though you don't feel great, they're just getting by. You could be really healthy with one body part so sick, so traumatized, so wrapped in fibrin that you're deathly ill, and yet all the markers on the outside of that are normal. Listen to the show again. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc, not.com. If you're lost in the labyrinth of help and you need guidance, call the office, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. Have a great fourth. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.